for America's favorite fighting Frenchman. I'm taking this horse by the reins, making red coats weather with blood stains. Till I'm never gonna stop until I make 'em drop or burn 'em up and scatter the remains. Down. Watch me engaging them, escaping them, enraging them. Ow! I go to France for more fun. I come back with more guns and ships.
Sarah Vau is known for many things, including her unapologetic nerd girl take on the world, according to Vanity Fair, and her idiosyncratic, often hilarious appearances on programs like The Daily Show, The Late Show with David Letterman, and, of course, This American Life. Now, Sarah Vau delivers Lafayette in the somewhat United States about the only Frenchman all of America has ever agreed upon, our Revolutionary War hero, the Marquis de Lafayette. In her lively style, Vau reconstructs how a swashbuckling French aristocratic orphan decided to pin his teenage ambitions on helping the American colonies break away from the British. Again, the name of the book is Lafayette in the Somewhat United States, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Sarah Vau back to the roundtable. Sarah, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe.
Very nice to have you back on the program. What brought you to Lafayette and wanting to look at this particular part of our history?
I mean, there are a few reasons. I mean, one of the simplest reasons is for about 10 years I lived near Union Square in New York City, and I walked by his statue almost every day. So he was sort of one of my neighbors. I was always thinking about him just, you know, on the way home from the grocery store all the time. The other thing I guess I'm interested in friendship, and I think a lot of the book is about bickering, but some of it is about friendship and affection, and there's something about his story and his close relationship with George Washington, and then ultimately with the American people at large. There's a lot of love there. So that was the initial appeal, I guess.
What is it about his story that is so ripe for bickering?
I was attracted to him partly because he was so beloved, and especially, you know, almost a half century after the Declaration, he came back to America as an old man, and in 1824, and it was a really big deal. And he, at that point, was the last living general of Washington's army, and, you know, like two-thirds of the population of New York City gathered to meet his ship. It was this love fest, and I was attracted to that. But then, I mean, kind of like what happened to Lafayette. So I get into my research and really dig into the Revolutionary era, and at pretty much every point on the timeline where I have to, you know, talk about what's going on, the context of where Lafayette is, all the Americans are doing, not all that they're doing, but they're doing a lot of bickering. There's a lot of infighting. There's a certain discord between the Continental Congress and the Continental Army, and then some of the congressmen and some of the army officers are trying to fire, they want to fire George Washington. And, you know, after Lafayette was here for about 6 months, he's writing George Washington from across the camp at Valley Forge, and he basically says, like, I really think you guys can defeat the British if you can stop fighting with each other, you know. And Washington does agree, and he says, we do have a fatal tendency toward disunion. And, I mean, especially in the Congress, like at one point, I remember reading one of the congressmen, he's talking about how much time they waste and how much time they just spend squabbling, and he says, we murder time. So, I mean, maybe that doesn't happen in Albany, but it certainly it certainly like rang a bell with me. And then when he comes back in 1824, it's the most like rancorous presidential election in American history. And then when I'm trying to do my research and go to some of these battlefields where he fought during the war, I'm stymied because you know, I was researching during the fall of 2013 during the government shutdown. So like I literally couldn't get into Independence Hall because the lights were off. You know, that was considered a non-essential government service. So it just kept coming up. I mean, the thing that drew me to him was that, you know, Americans, he was so beloved by just about everybody, partly because he was French. So, you know, back then it was all North versus South, even, you know, in 1824. But, like, everybody, like, Lafayette belonged to everybody. But then, you know, joke's on me as I start telling this story, because there's a lot of arguments.
Well, let us.
I mean, there are the battles, and then there are the arguments.
Right, the infighting, and then there's the actual battle. So, let's talk a little bit about Lafayette and being French, because that really is a key ingredient in the story, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, we could not have won that war without French help. I mean, I believe that. I mean, for one thing, they didn't have any money. They didn't have any gunpowder, which you need. And once the King of France signs the Treaty of Alliance with Ben Franklin and the other Americans, like, all the soldiers at Valley Forge throw a party and yell, "Long live the King of France," you know? And then the King of France sends his army and navy over to help George Washington. And by the time they get down to Yorktown, which is the decisive, conclusive battle of the war, where Cornwallis surrenders, there are more British soldiers and sailors there than Americans, you know. So, yeah, we owe those guys. And Washington kind of personifies that friendship, that alliance between the Americans and the French.
What is there about, and you touched on this a moment ago, I just want to get back to it, about the relationship between Lafayette and Washington that was so strong and really so special?
Yeah, I mean, some of it was Lafayette was an orphan, and Washington didn't have any biological children. And there was something just very disarming about Lafayette in general, and he was so, like, overly affectionate, and Washington wasn't really used to that. He was a very stoic person, but he does, like, really warm to Lafayette, partly because, you know, Washington's dealing with, like, chaos all the time. So many of his troops are deserting him because there's no food or pay or shoes or water, you know, and here's this kid who is raring to go. And, you know, over and over again, Lafayette is, like, to Washington, it's basically like, put me in coach. And he, you know, establishes himself as, like, really brave, really gung-ho, always ready to lend a hand, always ready to get into the thick of it. And also, like, because Washington is, I mean, when he's not fighting the British, he's fighting the Americans and the ones who are, like, conspiring to get rid of him, conspiring to fire Washington. I mean, partly for good reason, Washington makes some mistakes that are pretty grave. But, like, from the beginning, Lafayette is on Washington's side, and there are a lot of letters where, you know, Lafayette is just talking smack about Washington's enemies amongst the Americans, and that really, like, solidifies their friendship, I think. I mean, because Lafayette, more than just about anyone, is on Washington's side, unequivocally.
You make the point a few times in the book that Washington's reaction to Lafayette is often very patient and very paternal.
Yeah, I mean, Lafayette was a kid. By Yorktown, he had been fighting with the Continental Army for 4 years, but even then he was only 23 at the end, you know. So he is, I mean, Jefferson complained of Lafayette's canine qualities, the word Jefferson used, like, there was something kind of puppy dog-like about Lafayette, and some of that was he was puppy dog-like in his affection and how demonstrative he was with Washington, and then some of it, he's, you know, he gets upset in very childish ways, and when Lafayette's upset, he writes poor Washington these really, really long letters, and you know, and Washington is patient with him, and it is paternal, and it, their letters are really wonderful to read. They almost remind me, I mean, especially from the Lafayette point of view, like they kind of, there are these letters that Herman Melville writes to Nathaniel Hawthorne, and like Melville is so much more effusive to Hawthorne. And there's one point in those letters where Melville's like, I wish I had a paper mill nearby that could just continually crank out paper that I just keep writing to you, you know. And it's rare to find that kind of effusive male friendship, especially back then, I think.
The title of the book is Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. Talk a little bit about the decision to use that word somewhat and how applicable it was from the beginning of the book to the end of the book.
Besides all the, like, bickering and the infighting and the, like, inefficiency of the Continental Congress then, just like our Congress now, I mean, the book ends in Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C., just partly because I wanted to deal with how many places are named after Lafayette, but to me that place is the most meaningful because it's a place of protest. It's where we the people yell at our president, and not just Americans. You know, like if some foreign leader is in town in D.C. visiting the president, there are people from countries where protest is not allowed who come to Lafayette Park to protest their own leaders, because if they did that back home, they would be thrown in jail. And ultimately, like, I came to see, I mean, the colonists, the patriots, they were somewhat united the way we are. They were united enough. You know, I mean, part of the strength of this country comes from that tendency towards infighting, because it comes from people expressing their opinions and disagreeing. And I came to see that disagreement as a strength. I mean, it's not only a strength, and, you know, it sometimes we get on each other's nerves maybe a bit too much, and, you know, it's embarrassing when our government shuts down. But basically, like, that through line of disunity in the history of the country, it comes from our ability to express ourselves freely. And I think we should be proud of that, even when our elected officials are making us cringe on a daily basis.
Sarah Vow is the author of Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. The book is published by Riverhead. Sarah Vow, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks, Joe. Thanks.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. Sarah Vow is the author. Riverhead is the publisher. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Hey, oui, mon ami, je m'appelle Lafayette. The Lancelot of the revolutionary set. I came from afar just to say bonsoir to the king, cause it's toi who is the best, c'est moi.